everybody, and welcome to another beautiful Thursday morning. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And I have a great show lined up for all of you today. My guest will be Stephen Satterfield, who is the executive chef and co-owner of Miller Union, which is an award-winning, seasonally driven restaurant located in Atlanta's West Side neighborhood. And I'm really excited to have Stephen on. I met him this past summer at Slow Food Nations in Colorado and had the opportunity to speak with him and listen in on a panel that he was on. And he was just great. And he has a book called Roots to Leaf that we're going to talk about. So stay tuned for him to come on in just a little bit. But first, I want to share with you some things going on in and around the news, some petitions I want you all to sign, the weird weather that we're having, and, of course, share my weekly recipe with you. So first, if you get my newsletter, you've seen the petitions that I have up there. If not, please sign up for my newsletter at iegreen.com. But every week I post some issues that are happening that need your support, and especially in the climate of Washington that we're living under right now, it's really important for all of us to take a stand and to really stand up for the things that we think are important, because right now our government officials are not doing that for us, and they need to know. I remember when Obama said, show me the movement. When people are in power and they want to make change, it's hard enough. But when people are in power and they don't want to make change, they really need to see an uproar of political unrest from the people in order to make things happen. So right now, the Trump administration has overruled the Environmental Protection Agency's own career scientists and have refused to ban the toxic pesticide chlorpyrifos. And this is a pesticide that is sprayed on all of our citrus and on lots of our fruits and vegetables, and it has been shown to increase rates of autism and ADHD. In our children, it has shown lowered IQs for children whose mothers are exposed to the pesticide during pregnancy, and it is just really bad. And right now, our EPA administrator, Scott Pruitt, does not believe in any of this science, and he is just going against what the Environmental Protection Agency stands for. So please sign the petition for that. If you don't have my website, you can go to Food Democracy Now! Or Food and Water Watch and sign their petitions on the same issue. Also, there's a merger happening of Bayer and Monsanto. Both are biotech companies and pharmaceutical companies that are really, set to merge and create the biggest chemical group around. And we really don't want that to happen, because it will just create more power for the corporation and less for the people. So please tell the Attorney General not to support this merger. And it just would be really bad for our food system. So please sign the petition there. And that's from Friends of the Earth. Also, lots of things are going on in and around the city. Food Tank is having their New York Summit starting September 10th, or on September 10th, focusing on food loss and food waste. And I'll be talking to Stephen Satterfield about food waste a little bit as well, because that is an issue that so many chefs are really trying to take on and help spread the word about food waste and educate the public on ways to use all of our vegetables and all of our fruit. But anyway, that's going to be the focus of this Food Tank Summit. It's Wednesday, September 13th from 9 to 5. It's sold out, but you can participate through live streaming. So you can go onto the Food Tank website to be able to connect in that way. Also, this Saturday, Slow Food North Shore, our local slow food chapter, is having a family event and a vegetarian sushi making workshop. And we'll be screening this cute film called What's on Your Plate, which is documentary film about two young girls, 11 and 12, who are seeking to find out where their food comes from. And it's really a delightful film and great for kids and parents of all ages. And following that, I will lead a vegetarian sushi cooking demo workshop in the cafe at the Cinema Arts Center in Huntington. So you can buy tickets for that online or call the box office at the Cinema Arts Center in Huntington. It's $7 for members, $12 for public, and the sushi cooking workshop is $10 for adults and $8 for children. So I hope you can join us for that. Also this weekend, September 10th, Restoration Farm, our local organic CSA organic farm, is having their fall potluck, and everybody is invited, and that's at 4 p.m. on Sunday. There is also a Hip Hop for Hunger happening in the Bronx on September 16th, and this is at the Bronx Food and Wine Festival, and it should be a fun time. That's September 16th from 4:30 to 8:30, and you can find out more about that on my website. I have a link, or you can go to the Andrew Friedman Mansion, which is where it's going to be, and they should have information there as well. Next weekend, September 17th, there's a National Drive Electric Car Week event out in Riverhead at the Tanger Outlets. They are going to be displaying all the varieties of electric cars that are out there on the market right now, so that if you're interested in learning more about an electric car or seeing what's out there, you can go to one place and see them all at once. So that should be great. I'm certainly interested in the new generation of electric cars, seeing how they are working, and that we're seeing more and more electric car stations popping up. So it may be the way of the future, which would be great. Anything we can do to get off of some fossil fuels is a really wonderful thing. There's another event called Talk and Taste, evenings at Essex Street Market, and that's co-presented by New York City Compost Project, and it's hosted by the Lower East Side Ecology Center. And they're also looking at ways to tackle food waste using surplus bread to make beer. So that should be an interesting event. The beer that they'll be sampling there was brewed from surplus bread, and there's a panel discussion that will follow the whole event. So that should be fun. There is October 5th and 6th. It's the 6th Annual Georgia Farm to School Summit coming up. And there's also October 26th, the Healthy School Food Gala, and the organization Coalition for Healthy School Food. This is their annual gala, and I'm there every year putting out a plant-based entree for attendees to sample. So if you can make it to that on October 26th, you should come down to that. There's also an event going on in Atlanta called Chefs Collaborative Sustainable Food Summit, and this is really for members of Chefs Collaborative, and both Stephen Satterfield, who will be on just a little bit, and myself, we are members of this wonderful organization, and it's a group of chefs who are really trying to help educate the public and learn, and educate ourselves even, to learn more about ways in which we can address problems in the food system. And as I said before, food waste is a problem that we have been really tackling and looking at, and I'll be talking to Stephen more about that in a little bit. But the Chefs Collaborative Sustainable Food Summit is in Atlanta from September 9th through the 11th. And last year it was in New York, and I met Stephen in New York then as well. So all great things coming up. I hope you can join us for some. And there's a lot more. I just don't want to take the time to go over them all because I want to share my recipe with you. But check out the events on my website at ieatgreen.com. So this week, of course, I have so much squash coming out of the garden, and I still have kale and Swiss chard, so many things that need to be harvested that I just need to make recipes, and I'm really trying to create recipes that are also good to freeze. So that's this recipe right here. Was a squash vegetable lasagna. The first one I made, you know, again, I'm just, you know, creating the dish as I go, so I had to make sure it was good before I made it again to freeze it. So it was really great. It's not a weekday evening meal because it really takes a little bit of time because there's different layers and the different layers have to be prepared. So it's not a quick throw together, but you know, you can put it together in an hour. So that's not too bad. And it's, you know, filled with so many delicious vegetables. And they're it's flexible, so you can use what you have coming out of your garden. Right now, my eggplants all need to be picked, my Swiss chard, my kale, that can keep growing, as well as my collard greens. I just planted some new arugula and some spinach and some more lettuce because it loves the cooler weather, so I can take advantage of that. Same with some more herbs. My cilantro, my dill, I always plant in the spring, and they only last a few weeks because the minute it gets hot, they just bolt. So this is the time to replant those herbs and let them go into the fall. So anyway, this recipe that I want to share with you is a squash vegetable lasagna. There's no pasta in here at all. It's just vegetables. So this is the ingredient list. First, you're going to need some olive oil just to saute in and to line the casserole pan with. One butternut squash, deseeded and sliced. And depending on the size, you might not use it all. I had some left over, so I have to make another one. So I used more like half of my butternut squash. One eggplant, which was a nice-sized eggplant, two potatoes, a half a teaspoon salt, 3 tablespoons of pesto, 2 red onions chopped, 1 shallot, 2 cups of cherry tomatoes cut in half, and I had all different colors for my garden, 2 tablespoons minced garlic, 1/4 cup of white wine, 1/4 cup of grated Parmesan cheese, 3 cups of grated Gruyere cheese, and then that's for one part, and then for the other filling, you need 1 red onion diced, 2 stalk celery diced, 2 cups of packed finely chopped kale and Swiss chard. And I had a lot. I took out the heavy stems of the kale, and I chopped up the greens really fine, and I packed them into a cup, measuring cup. So if I wasn't pushing it down, it probably would have been 4 cups of loosely packed. But this was 2 cups of packed kale and chard. And then I also had separated out the stalks of the Swiss chard, and I cut those up. And I had 2 cups of Swiss chard stalks that I cut into diced pieces, kind of like you would with celery. 2 small peppers diced, 1 cup of walnuts that I chopped. And I always toast my walnuts before using them in a recipe just to bring out the flavor. So you can just put those in a warm oven for 5 minutes, you know, like 350 for 5 minutes, and that would do it. Or you can do it in a cast iron frying pan just for a couple of minutes. I still had some garlic scapes, so I put in 1/4 cup of garlic scapes. If you don't have that, you can add an extra tablespoon of garlic, minced garlic to that. I did put in 1 tablespoon of minced garlic, 2 tablespoons of white wine, and 1/4 pound of fresh mozzarella that I just put on top at the end. So we're going to start by making the filling. We're going to saute onion and shallot in olive oil with 2 tablespoons of minced garlic. When the onions are translucent, add the cherry tomatoes and cook those down for about 3 minutes or so, and add the salt and 1/4 cup of white wine, and let that cook for another 3 minutes until most of the wine has evaporated. Add 3 tablespoons of pesto and the Parmesan cheese to that and cook that for a minute. Now, just so you know, my pesto was vegan pesto, so it didn't have the Parmesan cheese, so that's why I'm adding the Parmesan cheese at this time. If you are using a pesto that already has Parmesan cheese in it, you don't need to add that separately. So then I removed the tomato mixture from the cast iron pan, put it into a bowl and set it aside so I could reuse that pan. And so using that pan, I sauteed the next onion along with the celery, the Swiss chard stalks, the pepper, the garlic scapes, and the garlic. And I cooked that for a few minutes until it started to until everything started to get soft. Then I added 2 tablespoons of wine to that. I added the chopped greens and cooked those down until they were all cooked together, and I removed that from the heat and added chopped walnuts to it and put that into a bowl and set that aside. Then I greased the bottom and the sides of the casserole pan, and I lined the bottom first with the slices of pesto, 1 even layer. Then I added 1/2 of the tomato mixture to the casserole pan, and half of the kale mixture, both in even layers. And then I added one half of the grated Gruyere cheese. That was a cup and a half of the grated Gruyere. Spread that evenly as another layer. Then I did a layer of eggplant slices over the cheese and added the remaining tomato mixture in a thin layer. Then I added the squash slices in an even layer over the tomatoes. And then I covered the squash slices with the remaining kale mixture and spread that in an even layer on top of the casserole. And then I sprinkled a quarter cup of parsley over the kale and spread that out. And put the remaining Gruyere cheese on top. And I baked that for 40 minutes. Then I removed it and to check it, and I noticed that the kale, because the kale and the walnuts are a dark green color, it didn't look so pretty. So that's why I added the fresh mozzarella over the top. And when I do this again, I'm actually going to switch the kale layer with the last layer of the tomato so that the tomatoes are on top so that I have some red showing through as opposed to the green. I just think it will be prettier. But the fresh mozzarella on top was really delicious. And then I put it back in the oven and cooked it for another 20 minutes until the mozzarella was melted as well. Anyway, I have to tell you, it was to die for. The casserole was so delicious. Everybody loved it. It's loaded with vegetables. I'm going to make a vegan variety this week, and I'll share that with you next week, because I think instead of the cheese, it would be really wonderful to put in a cashew cream on top of that and bake it and see how that comes out. So stay tuned for that next week. And now it's my pleasure to introduce to all of you my guest, who I said before is Stephen Satterfield. He's the executive chef and co-owner of Miller Union, which is an award-winning, seasonally driven restaurant located in Atlanta's West Side neighborhood. And since opening the restaurant in 2009, the restaurant has received many, many honors, including ones from Eater, Bon Appetit, Food and Wine, and Esquire. And in 2015, Stephen published his first cookbook called Root to Leaf, and we're going to be talking about that today. It's been getting great recognition for the amazing book it is, and it's really a book that can just really tell you what to do with every part of the vegetable, and I'm really excited to talk more about that in just a little bit. And this year, he was actually named Best Chef of the Southeast by the James Beard Foundation, and his dedication to cooking seasonally and his unwavering support for local farmers is his driving philosophy behind his restaurant and everything he does, and I'm just thrilled that he's with us today. Stephen, you with me?
I'm right here.
Great. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you for having me. And it sounds like you're as busy as I am.
Maybe not as busy, but I keep busy for sure. The garden, you know, just doing the garden. I tell you, when you have a garden, you get such a new appreciation for the work of farmers. You just see what incredible work it is and how much work it is. And it's just amazing. So, yeah, that keeps me busy all season.
Well, I don't grow anything, but I have a major deep appreciation for farmers. And I definitely understand all the hard work that goes into growing food. And I think that's one of my inspirations for cooking.
Yeah. And I think when you do understand that, you're much more willing to pay a farmer a fair wage for what
Absolutely.
They grew, because you know how much work it is, as opposed to the disconnect that most of us have by going to a supermarket and just not even thinking about where it came from. So
I agree.
I just wanted to ask you if you could just share a little bit of your story, your history. Did you always know you wanted to be a chef? When did you start cooking? What was your inspiration that got you started on your path?
Well, I have a little bit of a roundabout path to cooking. I actually studied architecture at Georgia Tech here in Atlanta. I grew up in Savannah, Georgia, and moved here to go to college. And I loved the program. It was very difficult, challenging, definitely learned a lot about my limits and also a lot about how to tap into the creative process and make things. When I finished my undergrad program, my final year of school, I was studying abroad in Paris and had an incredible year living in France. I think that's when I really blossomed in terms of my awareness of food, just the markets, the street markets there are so vibrant and the food is so beautiful and seasonal. And I think I really became aware of seasonality on that year abroad, and also just learning how to shop the Parisian way, where you just buy enough for a day or two, so everything's fresh at your home and you don't have things wasting in the back of the refrigerator. Plus, I had a tiny, tiny kitchen with a tiny dorm-sized fridge, so I didn't really have much room anyway. And when I got back to Atlanta and got into the field and some internships, I just realized that my heart wasn't in architecture, and luckily I was able to listen to my gut, and I just kind of got out of that pretty quickly. It was when everything switched over to computers, and I knew that I wanted to work with my hands. And from there, I started playing music, and I played guitar and picked up a guitar for the first time, started learning how to play. And within a year's time, I had formed a band, and within another year's time, wrote a record and got signed to a record label. So I was starting a music career at a young age, my early 20s. And in that time period, I started working in restaurants. And I was just doing that to meet, you know, my financial needs of paying my bills and living on my own. And I definitely got the restaurant bug and loved the structure of a busy restaurant. When you're busy and you have to deliver, you find ways to be the most efficient that you can. And I think that was something I really needed in my life, was just that kind of structure of a restaurant to keep me focused on something. And at some point, several years later, I kind of had to make a choice between food and music, because I started really getting into cooking and I wanted to work for more accomplished chefs. And as I started to do that, I realized that the time requirements were much longer, that you really had to focus and study on these, on the culinary arts to do the best job that you could. And I realized that I needed to either pick one or the other and give it 100%. And so because the restaurants were paying my bills and music really wasn't, I decided to go all in for cooking, and it's definitely paid off. And I worked for Ann Quattrano here in Atlanta, who has several restaurants, but I worked at her, at the time, new restaurant called Floataway Cafe. Really awesome, small, fine casual place, fine dining casual that had a very strong seasonal component to it. And she was one of the first chefs that I was aware of that was buying from local farmers. And from there, I moved to a place called Watershed. In its original days, was in Decatur, a neighboring town here in Atlanta, just 15 minutes away. And I worked under Scott Peacock, who I ended up staying there for 9 years. Every time I thought about possibly leaving, I would get a promotion and a raise. And he really took me under his wing and taught me so much about food and cooking and philosophy. And again, another chef that was really focusing on seasonality. And at that time, it was 1999, 2000. So that was something, you know, 17, 18 years ago, that was really sort of a new concept for restaurants, especially in Atlanta. But it's a very old idea. So I think we've really turned the corner. There's so many more people that are focusing on seasonality now and eating with the seasons and paying attention to the produce harvest, shopping at farmers markets. And so it's really nice to be a part of that movement and to be a part of it here early on in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm. And is Miller Union your first restaurant?
Yes. So Miller Union's my first place. When I left Watershed after working there for so long, and I started as a grill cook, worked my way up, worked on every station. I got promoted to sous chef and then executive sous chef. And then I became the person that ran the kitchen and was Scott's basically go-to person. So I provided all the structure and the all the, you know, necessary tools to make everything happen. And Mm-hmm. He won the James Beard Award for Best Chef Southeast. I believe it was in 2006.
And
that was when I was
name?
Running his kitchen. So it was a very exciting time for me to see how that can all happen. And lo and behold, 10, 11 years later, it happened to me, which is really also just incredible. But yeah, Millerina was my first spot, and I knew that I wanted to really focus on a super seasonal restaurant that paid a lot of attention to what's growing here locally, how can we respond to it, and adjust and change the menu as the seasons progress.
Mm-hmm. And the growing season in Atlanta, I would guess, is, you know, significantly longer than what we have here in New York. Are there things that you know of that grow there that are really prevalent there that we don't have up here?
Absolutely. We have a year-round growing season, unless we have a harsh winter. We tend to see, I would say our summer is very long. It starts in May and sometimes early May and doesn't really end till sometimes early October, just depending on the weather. We're having unusually cool weather this September, so we're already seeing a lot more fall vegetables come in early. But generally, summer is super long. We do at least 3 summer menu changes, whereas in the fall, winter, spring, we just typically do kind of 1 overhaul with some adjustments as things come in and out.
Uh-huh. So you do 3 changes in the summer, and then the fall and winter one kind of stays kind of stationary?
Yeah, once the weather cools off, we see a lot of changes early fall to late fall, but once we're in the middle of winter, it's pretty much locked down with root vegetables, hearty greens. We even see in January, we see our first of the season spring onions, because in South Georgia, it's much warmer there than it is in Atlanta, which is kind of more in the northern part of the state. And we can get produce from northern Florida and South Georgia, but still fairly regional. We see a lot of citrus that's grown in this region in the southern part of the state, and we see early spring vegetables. So a lot of times we'll see March be the beginning of our spring, like early March, sometimes late February.
Mm-hmm. Now, southern cooking, you know, has a reputation for being a lot of fried food, and you know, I know even when I've traveled there, it seems like a lot of the vegetables have a little ham bone in them. Can you talk to us a little bit about the reason for that? And is it really, you know, a reputation that is worth the reputation, or is it changing?
Southern food, I think, is really evolved. And I think we've always been an agrarian society from early on. And so there is this outward appearance that everything's fried chicken, mac and cheese, you know, fried green tomatoes. I mean, sure, we like that stuff, but we also eat a lot of vegetables. And, you know, I think one of the quintessential things that you see in the South is a vegetable plate, especially in the summertime, where people will just eat one big plate of variety of vegetables. We offer that year-round, and it changes a lot with the seasons. And you know, sometimes people will order entrees and just get a vegetable plate for the table so they can try extra things. But I think we're seeing a shift to a fresher, lighter South, where there's a lot more interest in incorporating more produce to the plate and a little less of a heavy comfort food.
Mm-hmm. And what about the vegetable plates being, you know, center stage, like entree type vegetable plates? Are you seeing that? Are you doing more with that? Creating?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've always offered our vegetable plate as an option for an entree. So it's, you know, we basically, the way we do our menu is we have at the bottom, we have 5 different sides that are seasonal, and you can have any of them a la carte, or you can make them one plate. And so we have at the bottom of our entrees, it says seasonal vegetable plate, and then the five sides are that plate. So you can order them as sides or as one plate. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think what I'm talking about more, though, is like the recipe I just shared, for instance, the vegetable squash lasagna. You know, just using vegetables to create an entree type of dish so that someone still might get that and still get the vegetable plate
aside.
We do it
more in appetizer portions, mostly because of the price point of our menu. So we buy as much as we can locally, including, you know, the way we source our proteins. We always work with local farms and purchase, you know, humanely raised animals and, you know, pastured poultry, sustainable seafood, grass-fed beef, all that stuff is important to us. And our portions on the protein are small. But based on the true cost of the food and what we have to mark up to make our bottom line, our entrees generally range in the low 20s to low to mid 30s. So if we create a vegetable-centric entree, a lot of times the true cost of that is going to be pretty disparate to the rest of the entrees. So we find it to be more successful in our model to feature those vegetables as like a vegetable focus on a plate as a more of a starter size.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so that just because it would just be too much of a jump in price, and it just seems a little off when you look at it, you know? And I think that's important. Customer perception is important, and we don't want to, you know, we think charging the true cost is really important too. So we really don't, we're not in it to like be greedy and make a lot of money. We're just trying to serve what we feel is the right thing to serve. And so a lot of that, you know, unfortunately becomes more on the expensive side. I mean, our chicken entree is, you know, we have to charge $28. And it's a half of a chicken, a small chicken. But the way in which the chicken is raised, it is a lot more expensive to raise, but we feel it's the right thing to serve. And so, and Georgia, as you may know, is the capital of big chicken farming. And it's really, you know, one of the worst when it comes to examples of farming. So it's not even really farming. It's factory driven. And that, you know, making those kinds of choices, we end up with the prices that we have. So, yeah, our vegetable focus and features are more generally small plates, which is fun because then you can share and taste a lot of things.
Sure, sure. I always found, you know, when I've done my, you know, I've worked as a private chef a lot and gone into people's homes, and I cook for people with different illnesses. So I cook for many different diets. And even though I'm primarily a vegetarian chef, I will cook, you know, chicken, beef, fish for somebody who needs that. So I always found that when I was cooking something that was, you know, an animal protein, it was so much quicker. I mean, it was like if they asked for, you know, steak, I almost felt like I was cheating because they didn't want any sauce.
I agree.
They didn't want any reductions.
Yeah.
You know, you just salt, pepper, and put it on the grill.
How much work goes into cooking vegetables because there's so much preparation. You know, when you get a steak, you just buy it. It's already been cut, right, into the shape and size that you want. But, and that, you know, the difference is in a restaurant, we might get in, you know, much larger side of beef or a whole fish or whole chickens or whatever, we have to break it down ourselves, and that's more cost effective for us. But vegetable prep takes a long time, and because we're seasonal, we also try to feature as many of the in-season vegetables as possible when they're around. We spend a lot of time preparing them, and we have an endless amount of work to do. There's never a time where no one's hands are idle. I mean, we just don't stop washing, chopping, slicing, dicing, everything. I mean, there's just a lot of work that goes into vegetables, but it's so worth it.
It is. I think it's so worth it. But, you know, I'm always astonished at, you know, if I was putting together five meals that were meat-centric, you know, I could do that so much quicker than five vegetarian meals. So anyway, you know, I think sometimes people, obviously not you because you know what the true cost of food is, but, you know, people sometimes think, oh, you know, meat is worth a lot and vegetables should be cheap because they're less expensive, but they don't realize you're paying someone to process the food and to, you know, cook it, and it takes so much longer. And so you have to add fair labor wages into that, and it kind of equals out, I think, after you do that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I wanted to take a quick break, and when we come back, I really want to focus on your book, Root to Leaf, and talk about some of the recipes in there and how people can really think about food waste and use all of the vegetable. So everyone listening, Stephen, you included?
Yes.
Don't go anywhere.
Yes.
We'll be right back. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. Be right back.
PRN.FM, bringing you new shows and ideas every day. The Progressive Radio Network is moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
It's the BRONX. You know what's next.
It's a bowl of soul. And get your dose of classic soul and independent R&B music from the United States and abroad on Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. A Bowl of Soul is a music experience you won't forget or regret. Check out A Bowl of Soul on the Progressive Radio Network.
Progressive Radio Network, the number one network for those who care about the truth.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And I'm talking with Stephen Satterfield about his book, Root to Leaf. So, Stephen, can you tell us a little bit about your book? How did you break it up? It's by season. It's by complexity. Can you share that with us?
Absolutely. So Root to Leaf was really designed to be kind of a study in vegetables and sort of throughout the course of a year. And I started taking notes about what I saw coming in and out of season and what we were using at the restaurant, but also thinking about what would be good to execute at home. And it is definitely broken up by season. We shot, we had an incredible photographer, and he unfortunately didn't live in Atlanta. I was based out of New York, and so whenever we shot for the book, we would shoot all of one season in basically 2.5 days. So it's a very big book. It's 500 pages with 200 recipes. So there's a lot of work, but really, really inspiring. And I think we all really bonded over the project because it really is designed to be kind of a guide for whoever wants to broaden their vegetable repertoire a little bit, yet the recipes are simple and easy. Maybe just give you a new perspective on some of these vegetables and how they can be utilized. And not just eating seasonally, but also trying to utilize every part of the plant. So whenever we had beets with tops, we would talk about how to use, you know, the stems and the leaves, or, you know, carrot tops or radish greens or fennel fronds, all those things that can sometimes be considered sort of vegetable cast-offs. I felt it was important to showcase them as culinary ingredients as well, and that they can be enjoyed in different ways.
Mm-hmm. Well, Carrot Tops is one that has baffled me. I have not done anything with Carrot Tops. And every time I take the tops of my carrots and I, at least I compost them, so I have a little less guilt. Every time I take the carrot tops, I'm like, there has to be something. And I just don't have, haven't had the time to like figure it out. So share with us, what do you do with carrot tops?
Well, I will say in at the time that I wrote with Talith, I felt like carrot tops was going a little too far because I don't think they have a lot of flavor. And so that was one of the examples. I said, you're going to have a lot of it. Maybe it's just more suitable for the compost bin. Since then, I have challenged myself to work more with carrot tops. And what I found is that I think they really work well in conjunction with other herbs. So if you, you know, let's say you mix chopped carrot tops with chopped parsley, chopped cilantro, and make a salsa, Italian-style salsa verde out of it with capers and shallots and olive oil, it's so flavorful and delicious. Or I've done a charmoula before where it has carrot tops and other herbs and like some dried mint or oregano with cumin, coriander, red chili flake. It's really more of a way to bulk up an herb sauce, and it does add a flavor. It's more of a green grassy flavor. It doesn't have the same kind of note as an herb would, but I'm embracing the carrot tops lately and utilizing them when I can.
Yeah, I mean, I've thrown them into your stock.
There will always be more carrot tops than carrots, though. You just can't use them all.
Right, right. I agree. I remember I was participated in Feeding the 5,000. I don't know if that event came to Atlanta or not, but it was in, you know, it's traveled around, and I know they did it in Washington, D.C. and in New York, Union Square. And there was a cooking demo using the tops of leeks, which is, you know, another one that I, you know, usually get the leeks and tops instantly just go into the compost bin, and then I use the lighter green part. But the tops, they cut into strips and boil them and use them as pasta. Have you ever tried that? I'm not hearing you. Everybody, we just lost our guest, but we're getting him back on, so don't go anywhere. But we're talking about how to use up carrot tops and the parts of vegetables that have not always gotten used. And I was talking about being at Union Square where they demonstrated using leek tops and cutting them into strips and making them like fettuccine or linguine, depending on the thickness that you cut them, boiling them in some water until they get soft, and then putting your tomato sauce or whatever sauce, garlic and oil or whatever it is.
My call just got dropped there. You still there?
Ah, yes, I am. Good. Welcome back.
We're sorry about that. We were talking about leek tops. And
yes.
I love the flavor of leek tops. They're really fantastic. And we use them a lot in flavoring stocks or jus made with meat scraps because they have a really deep flavor. I also use them sliced very, very thinly and cooked for a while because they can be a little woody. And if you slice them thinly, what happens is you're cutting those long fibers that run the length of the leek into shorter, more palatable pieces that are chewable and more delicious. And then cooking them for a while just helps tenderize that kind of woody quality.
Right, right. Yeah, I was pleasantly surprised with that one. Any other ones that might surprise us of parts of vegetables that you use that otherwise people wouldn't think of?
We use a lot of green stems. So like when you're using kale or chard or collard greens or anything like that, they have more of a woody stem, those hardier greens. And the leaves are more tender, and so we separate the greens from the leaves from the stems, and the stems we again cut crosswise thinly so that we can utilize them in a different way. And so we just saute them or steam them or roast them so that you can tenderize them first. And then we incorporate them into whatever dish that we're using the greens in. So the greens mm-hmm. cook sometimes more quickly, a lot more quickly than the stems will. And so we isolate them, separate them, and cook them in different ways, then marry them together in the same dish.
Yeah, that's what I did in this recipe that I shared today. I was using so much Swiss chard, and there was so much of the stems, which are very much like celery almost, celery stems. And so, yeah, I cut those, diced those up, and sauteed them separately because, as you said, the leaves just cook so quickly, but the stems need a little bit more in order to make them flavorful and good. So you want to share with us one of your favorite recipes from the book?
Sure. I was actually just thinking about there's a grain bowl that I use the beets, the stems, and the leaves in. And you can make it with quinoa or bulgur wheat or sorghum grain, whatever grain you feel would work best. And mm-hmm. cook that separately in just the water with a little bit of salt. You can add shallot and garlic to it or whatever. And roast the beets separately, clean the stems and the greens, and then we dice the stems and saute them a little bit, wilt the greens, and then marry that with the grain, add a little bit of farmer's cheese or feta if you want to, or some toasted, any kind of nuts, and then toss in the peeled, diced or sliced cooked beets at the end, and dress it with a little bit of vinaigrette. It's wonderful. You can put some fresh herbs in there. It's really adaptable to kind of any flavor profile.
I love those kind of grain bowls, you know, because you really can use any vegetable that you happen to have coming out of the garden at the time. You know, seasonal is really just such a delight. What are you cooking with right now? What's in season right now at your restaurant?
Well, it's a really interesting time because we have both the end of summer ingredients and the beginning of fall. And like I said earlier, we do have some cooler weather right now. We're unseasonably cool, which I am not complaining about. It can often be a very hot time of year right now. And so we're seeing still beautiful heirloom tomatoes and every kind of heirloom pepper that you can think of, both sweet and hot, a lot of eggplant, okra. We're still seeing melons that have been harvested, cantaloupe and watermelon, probably the last of the season right now. Muscadines, apples are all coming in, and we're seeing the first of the sweet potatoes. We also serve sweet potato greens, which is really fun, and a lot of people don't realize you can eat them. The farmers trim back the greens, and we serve them just cooked kind of like sauteed spinach. They're really great. And we're seeing the first of the fall squashes. We have spaghetti squash on the menu already. We just got some butternut in yesterday, and we're doing some changes this week. We've already adapted probably 6-7 menu items to adjust to September.
Mm-hmm. Can you also cook the regular potato greens?
That I do not know. I think the sweet potato greens are, I don't think potato greens are something that, I have no experience with that. But
yeah,
for some reason,
either.
Something's telling me no. Something's telling me not.
Uh-huh. Yeah, because, you know, I'll be harvesting my potatoes soon, and there's lots of greens there. Although the greens start, by the time you're harvesting the potatoes, the greens are already kind of looking a little sad. So they don't look as pretty as they did in the middle of the summer, but in the middle of summer, the potatoes weren't ready yet. So, interesting. I never knew you could eat sweet potato greens. That's great. That's a really great treat. So share with us some other things about your book that you would like to share.
It was just a really incredible experience. It's been really wonderful, you know, seeing people react to Roots to Leaf. I've had a lot of people send me letters or come by the restaurant and tell me how much they cook from it. and how it, some people have said it's changed their lives, that they actually eat more vegetables because of the book. And to me, that is a real success story. And it's also just been, it's been a really cool book to when I toured on the book and went around to other cities to promote it, I actually did it over the course of the year instead of all at one time. And it was a lot of fun because whatever we were preparing to serve to, you know, greet guests with when they came to a book signing or a dinner would be different every time. And it was just based on, you know, what was in season at that moment and in that city. I mean, Atlanta has such a very different climate zone than a lot of other places in the country. And so it was really just cool to, you know, do a Roots Relief event in California or in upstate New York or, you know, in Texas. Like everything was different. It was just about us responding to what was available at the time, and a great way to bond with another chef. If you're working with someone, you know, in that vein, we can really, really learn from each other. And I think that was really a great takeaway for me.
Mm-hmm. One vegetable that is very popular in the South that we don't have as much up here is okra. And, you know, I've heard so many people complain about okra and its slimy quality. And in your book, I think you address ways to cook with okra to mitigate that. Can you share that with us?
Okra is a very celebrated vegetable here in the South, and there are many ways to cook it. A lot of people just think it's fried or stewed, and certainly those are very popular methods. And stewing okra actually can thicken a broth to make it, you know, a more thicker viscosity, and whereas cooking it quickly is going to reduce that slime. So the slime comes from the ribs and the seeds inside. And the more they're agitated and kind of if there's friction or liquid or oil or whatever, that develops the slime. So like stirring a pot with okra in it is going to bring out the slime. The more cuts you have in your okra is going to bring out the slime. So when we make our fried okra, we actually develop the slime on purpose. And so we cut the okra lengthwise, and then we add a bit of water, and we just, we basically agitate it until that water becomes kind of like the texture of egg whites. Mm-hmm. And then from there, we use that liquid as the coating for the wet coating to have the cornmeal stick to the okra. And then it makes it really, really crispy. Another way to cook okra that I love is grilling it or roasting it at a very high temperature. And that really reduces the slime to the most minimal.
Uh-huh. Wow, that's great. Because I did not realize that if you cut it, you actually increase the slime. Although, like you said, if you're using it in a stew, it could help thicken the stew and enhance it in that way. So that's great to know. Yeah, great to know. So you have some events coming up. You want to share a few with us?
Yeah, so this weekend is the Chef Collaborative Sustainable Food Summit. And it will be September 9th through 11th, so it starts on Saturday, with some field trips leading up to the opening event. But we have chefs coming from all over the country to participate in lectures and speaker series, workshops, and also some great food and beverage experiences that we are creating to host everyone. So it's basically half a day on Saturday, a full day of programming Sunday with breakfast, lunch, and dinner served, and then we have a closing part to the summit on Monday with some more lectures and a beautiful lunch prepared by all the local leaders of Chef Collaborative around the country.
Nice. Like I said, I went to the one in New York and had my first Impossible Burger last year. And then you have one in Portland, Oregon. Are you going to that?
I'm going to be at Feast Portland, which is their food and wine festival, and doing a really fun party at Ava Jean's with Joshua McFadden, who is a very vegetable-forward chef and really has a really great book out called Six Seasons. And I'm also doing a cast iron skillet tasting in the tents at the festival. And I'll be doing a very southern dish, which is going to be shrimp and grits with okra and padron peppers.
Sounds great. Sounds great. Well, Stephen, it's been just so great having you on with us. I know there's some more events coming up, but let's just, we're almost out of time, so I just want to give a chance for you to share your website with everyone so that they can find out more about what you're doing, where to find you if they would like.
Absolutely, yeah. The restaurant, again, is called Miller Union. If you're in Atlanta, please come visit us. And our website is millerunion.com, and I also have stephensatterfield.com if you wanted to see more about what I'm up to. And there's links to Roots of Leaf and also another small book that I have called Peanuts, and it's a short stack edition, single subject cookbook on peanuts.
Wonderful. Well, thanks, Stephen, so much for joining us. I hope I run into you at one of these events, maybe at Macy's Herald Square in October.
Yeah, that sounds great. October 16th.
Yep. Thank you so much for spending the hour with me this morning. And everybody out there listening, thank you for joining us, and I'll see you all again next week.
Thank
Bye
you
for now.
Having me.